My name is Dennis Bernstein. The show is Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And Miguel Gavilán Molina, who started as a child, as he says, in the fields of misery, is back out there again, marching with the people. Stay tuned.
This is Miguel Gavilán Molina, reporting for Flashpoints. Here we are today. It's Wednesday, August the 3rd, 2022, and we find ourselves in Delano, California, on the epic pilgrimage spiritual walk that's been taking place today from Delano to Sacramento, a 335-mile walk, which will take 24 days. And today, the weather has been okay. There's a little breeze in the shade, but not in the sunlight.
My name is Free Welland Franklin, and tonight we are sharing some sounds from the UFW and their march / pilgrimage to the governor's office to demand his signature on AB 2183, the right to unionize without fear of intimidation or retaliation. The march will be 24 days and 335 miles in the summer heat of the Central Valley of California. To get some more background on this pilgrimage, let's check out this interview with the United Farm Workers president, Teresa Romero, produced by First Voice graduate Sarah Blanco.
Hello, I'm Sarah Blanco, and joining us today is Teresa Romero, president of the United Farm Workers, the UFW. She has been president for over 3.5 years. She was formerly the secretary treasurer for the UFW, and prior to joining the UFW, she managed a construction company and a law firm that helped workers with immigration and workers' compensation claims. She is an immigrant from Mexico. Teresa will be talking with us about the upcoming march from Delano to Sacramento, a pilgrimage for 24 days and 335 miles, where people will walk from Delano, California to Sacramento, starting on August 3rd. And it is for California Governor Gavin Newsom's signature on AB 2183, the California Ag Labor Relations Voting Choice Act. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Can you start first with maybe sharing one story, just something that's notable for you as you went along your journey to becoming the first Latina and first immigrant woman to become president of a national union in the United States? Something that comes to mind.
You know, Sarah, when I started working for the union, I thought I was going to be working for the union for a couple of years. It was at the time where the recession started. One of the first things that goes, you know, slows down is construction. So I decided, you know, that I needed to find a job just in case. And I started working with the union thinking I'll be here for a couple of years and then I'll go back to my business. When I started talking to the people that we represent, when I started interacting with them, when I started just understanding the challenges that they have, I thought to myself, I'm not going anywhere. And of course, I never thought I would become the president of the United Farm Workers. I remember my dad was very ill when the union decided that I would become the person that was going to succeed Arturo. And I went to see them because I got a note from my sister that he was not responding. So I went to see them and I'm talking to him and I'm telling him, I hope he's proud of me the union has decided that I was going to be the president of the UFW. But my dad had no reaction. And like at 3 o'clock in the morning, he wakes up. He has a big smile because we all are there. He doesn't realize that how ill he is. And when I was giving him something to eat, all of a sudden he stops and he says, "How come you're going to be the president of the United States?" And I thought it was just so, you know, in his unconsciousness, he heard what he wanted to hear. I was sharing, I'm going to be the president of the UFW, and I hope he's proud of me. But he heard something else. So he went to his grave thinking that I was going to be the president of the United States.
Oh, what a beautiful story. I love hearing especially that you had to were able to have that conversation, and also that it sounds like it's all of the good work that UFW has done and the people themselves and the workers themselves that really helped you stay motivated to want to do the job.
Absolutely. And you know what? They still motivate me to continue to do the job. There are many challenges that we have to face. But knowing at the end, I remember another thing. There were times at the beginning when I was so frustrated, and I would get home and I would say, why am I doing this? Why did I say yes? And one day my daughter says, why did you say yes, Mom? And my immediate answer without even thinking about it was, for the benefit of farm workers, of course. She said, okay, so that's why you're doing it. But they keep me focused. They keep me grounded. They motivate me to work harder because they work so hard to put food on our tables. They are the people that we need to be thinking about, because without them, we wouldn't have the food that we have, that we enjoy every day.
Absolutely. And let's be real, the challenges that farm workers faced long before the COVID pandemic were extreme, right? Many workers don't face a lot of those challenges.
You know, farm workers have a difficult job and have had it for many decades. And when the pandemic hit, we were so blessed that we had supporters that donated masks that we could distribute to farm workers, and especially in the farms that we don't have a contract, because we knew that that's where they were going to need them. They gave us cleaning supplies, and we were able to distribute that. But unfortunately, you know, I had the benefit of being able to work remotely. Many of us did. They didn't. And because also they're mostly undocumented, all the programs that were approved by the federal government excluded farm workers because they're not documented. And it was, you know, adding insult to injury. They're working in some areas where the temperatures, as you know, are getting hotter and hotter. In Washington and Oregon, we're having temperatures right now of 110 degrees, where that was unheard of. And we have been able to pass laws that would protect farm workers now, also including Oregon and Washington, to protect them from the heat, the high temperatures, where they could have a rest period, where they can ensure the workers are going to have fresh water, cold fresh water as they work during the day, where they're going to have a shaded area. So when they have lunch or they have a break, they have a shaded area where they can rest for a few minutes. That has saved lives and will continue to save lives. But we need to add to that the fact that the fires the last few years have been tremendous, and farm workers continue to work in areas where the air quality is horrendous. But again, we have been able to receive donations of N95 masks that we have been able to distribute to those areas, and making sure that the workers are aware of the rights and know that wearing the mask, it's going to protect them some from the air quality. But it's not an easy job. It's, the challenges are there and are every day. And I have the honor of representing people who work hard, give it their all, and are proud of the work that they do. But we want to make sure that these workers are recognized and they have the same protections that other workers have. And when you have in places like Oregon, the law says that a 12-year-old can work in the fields. It's just, tell me any other job that a 12-year-old legally can do. It's just not fair.
And the idea that, you know, a lot of us got to work from home, whereas they had to go in, who knows what kind of conditions they were traveling there in with other people, right? Couldn't isolate potentially either at work or in transportation, or even at home. I mean, I also think about just some of the basic work of stooping or to be hunched over for any long period of time. So the struggles are definitely many. And so Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta had long been fighting for some basic things like water and bathrooms and such. Just the idea that climate crisis is compounding it all, plus the pandemic, I also think about the simple fact that we could be sitting down in the shade and still get heat exhaustion. It's just unbelievable. Heroes, truly, yes, to put food on our table.
Yes. And you know what? We had invited all 100 U.S. senators to work in the field, just because we are also pushing an immigration bill that would give farm workers a path to legalization, the ability to go to their homes and visit relatives that they haven't seen in years and sometimes decades. And we had two senators that agreed to do it, Senator Alex Padilla from California and Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey. And they did it. They worked in the fields for 6 hours. And I can tell you that at the end of the day, they were exhausted. Their backs were hurting. And we're talking about two senators then that understand that the farm workers have a very important job in our country, not only to put for our table, but it's our food security. And it gave them a different level of understanding for this workforce. And I think I'm the type of person that I say, you know, the only way you know how difficult it is when you have done it, or when you take the time to listen to farm workers and learn from them their challenges, their fights every day that they have to find the energy to work 8, 10, 12 hours sometimes. If you don't talk to farm workers, not talk to farm workers, if you don't listen to farm workers or have worked in the fields, it is very difficult for anybody to truly understand how challenging this work is.
The UFW is sponsoring a walk with farm workers, a pilgrimage for 24 days and 335 miles, where people will walk from Delano, California to Sacramento in this blazing heat starting on August 3rd. And it is for California Governor Gavin Newsom's signature on AB 2183, the California Ag Labor Relations Voting Choice Act. Late last year, a similar measure, AB 616, was vetoed by California Governor Gavin Newsom. And according to the UFW, it would have allowed workers union voting from home and allow them to cast a secret ballot in many of the same ways that California voters did in the recall election. Protests against this veto were staged on Cesar Chavez Day of this year. And according to the UFW, Governor Gavin Newsom refused to meet with elected worker leaders, even when some marched to Newsom's personally owned winery. Why do the farm workers have to continuously sacrifice in order to get basic rights? What is the Voting Choice Act?
Sarah, in California, when we vote for elected officials, when we voted for governor, when we voted in the recall, we do it in a way that we have options. You can do it in person if you want. You can get a mailing ballot if you want. You can ask somebody to help you fill out the ballot if you want. And you can ask somebody to deliver it to the mail or to the voting places if you want to. So those are the things that we want for farm workers. Right now, the only way farm workers can vote, whether or not they want union representation, is at the employer's premises. After farm workers were threatened, some of them fired for the support of a union. So having only that option does not promote participation. We have seen in California that having those options has increased the number of people that are able to vote in whatever election. Last year, we introduced the bill, and during the recall time, do you know what farm workers were doing? They cannot vote because many of them are undocumented, but they were knocking on doors to make sure that people would go and vote against the recall. And a week later, Gavin Newsom vetoed the bill. We are reintroducing the same bill, and unfortunately, every gain that we are able to obtain for farm workers, it is a fight. It is a battle. It takes years. And one of the ways that we as a union have been able to get the attention of legislators, of supporters, and governors is by marching, because it is something that nobody else does. Nobody else has marched, you know, 300 miles, 400 miles, whatever it is, to bring attention to the plight of farm workers. And Gavin Newsom knows this is last year and this year, this is the most important bill for farm workers. and we're going to make sure that our supporters, other farm workers, legislators, know, other labor unions know that we are going to sacrifice this much because that's what it takes to get legislation in favor of farm workers. Nothing has been easy for them. So we're willing to go again to this extent to make sure that the governor understands that this is something that if having options to vote for him, it is good enough for him, it should be good enough for farm workers.
And even though the type of voting is different, right? Labor voting for in labor relations or voting for who's governor, the idea is still the same. Choice and the right to vote free of harassment. Also important to note that fairly early during the pandemic, Governor Newsom did come out with news about pandemic assistance for farm workers. He also appeared a calming spirit amidst the pandemic. But some notable vetoes on his part include at the end of 2020, Flashpoints reported that Liberal Governor Newsom vetoed SB 1257, which would have given domestic workers the right to health and safety precautions and protections. We've been speaking with Teresa Romero, President of the United Farm Workers. The UFW is sponsoring a walk with farm workers, a pilgrimage for 24 days and 335 miles. The upcoming pilgrimage will retrace the route of the historic trek that Cesar Chavez led in 1966 from Delano all the way to the state capital in Sacramento. And that was to place farm workers' grievances before the governor and the legislature. Please tell us about kickoff day. Tell us about this pilgrimage. What can we expect along the travels?
We're going to be starting on August 3rd in Delano at 40 acres, which is a historic site. That's what Cesar organized for many years and continues to be a place where farm workers feel comfortable. At one point, even when we were, you know, trying to get farm workers vaccinated, they were afraid. What if when I give my information, they do something with it? The moment they knew that we were going to get vaccines at 40 acres, thousands of farm workers came to get vaccinated. So that is a historic site. And we're going to be starting on August 3rd. There is in our website, there is already a schedule from where to where each day. And we ask people to join us, to make calls to the governor and say, you need to sign this bill. This is important for farm workers. They are the ones that are putting food on our table. And we want to make sure that as many emails, as many calls that our supporters can make, so he understands that this is something that not only the UFW and our movement wants, but also the consumers that are enjoying the fruits of this hard labor are interested and are wanting to get these for farm workers.
Who's actually marching?
We have a number of farm workers that are going to be the full-time workers that are marching. I'm going to be one of those people. I'm going to be marching for full-time. And what we're doing is at every city that we're going to be getting to, and we're going to be starting, many people join us just for that day, for half a day. But it is in solidarity for farm workers. We have a committee that is working on having at the end of the day, you know, a reception of these marchers that are sacrificing so much. People are going to be there. People are going to be bringing some entertainment in some cases. They want to feed us there. We want to make these a part of the community. They are the people that are benefiting from the sacrifices of the farm workers.
How do you intend to try to keep people safe from the heat and even violence while walking along the roads?
You know, as you know, we're a nonviolent group. Marches that we've had, we have not experienced it. But we're engaging every police station in every town to let them know what we're doing. We're going to have people that are going to be knowledgeable. And if any of our workers, any of our marchers, any of our supporters are showing some signs of any heat illness, we would put them in a car. We would drive them for a mile in an air-conditioned place where they can recuperate themselves and make sure that they're safe. We're not putting anybody in danger. We are making sure that these marchers are going to be protected and that we're not going to, you know, we are the ones that fight for heat illness protections, and we're going to make sure they're enforced.
The kickoff for the farm workers' march from Delano to Sacramento for Governor Newsom's signature is going to be August 3rd at 8 a.m. at the 40-acre site in Delano, California. It will start at 8 a.m., and I believe they're going to depart at 8:30. There'll be a mass and blessings at 8 a.m., and all walkers will depart at 8:30. So August 3rd from Delano to August 26th to Sacramento. And there is a map on their website that will tell you all of the different stops and journeys. And of course, their website will tell you more about the overall process and history of the UFW. You know, I keep thinking, like, how many times do they need to make a pilgrimage for the same things, you know, over and over, mm-hmm. the same things that countless other workers and job fields already enjoy. I also think about the beauty of this, but it is a very large sacrifice. One, they are putting themselves out there publicly. Two, the heat is intense. And we think about all of these different sacrifices that people make for spiritual reasons and here for basic human rights and a right to vote without intimidation and harassment. I want to thank you so much, Teresa Romero, for joining us. And Flashpoints will be there along the pilgrimage. Is there anything else you'd like people to know or how they can get more information?
They can go to our website. They can call our offices if they want more information. We are wanting them to be a part of this because, like you said, this is historic. And I want to thank Flashpoints for giving us the opportunity to talk about it, for you being there and being part of history, Sarah, because we once again are doing something that we have to work harder, that we have to sacrifice more to get any gains for farm workers when it is time that they're treated like any other worker in this country.
Thank you so much, Teresa Romero.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you very much for really doing this for farm workers.
All right. Thank you. And we'll see you on the road.
We'll see you on the third.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
For Flashpoints, I'm Sarah Blanco.
You just heard First Voice graduate Sarah Blanco speaking with the United Farm Workers president, Teresa Romero. Thank you, Sarah B., and thank you, Teresa, for being such a courageous leader of this historic union, the UFW. That interview first aired on Flashpoints in the lead up to the march to Sacramento for the governor's signature. So fast forward from that interview, and now members of the La Onda and Full Circle crew have packed up and headed down here to Delano for the kickoff of the march. Once we arrived at the world-famous 40-acre site in Delano, there were already hundreds of people gathering there for the kickoff of this historic event. And we kicked off the show with an in-depth interview with Teresa Romero, the current president of the UFW. Now let's hear from these powerful women as they fired up the crowd just before the march began. Here they are speaking to the crowd of 200-plus people who showed up for the kickoff of this historic pilgrimage. And remember, this was a bilingual event, but I did do some editing for our English-speaking audiences. But you will hear a little English and a little Spanish. Check it out.
Vamos a presentar a nuestra líder de la Unión de Campesinos, Teresa Romero, que se encuentra acá detrás de mí. Pásale, Teresa.
Muy buenos días. Good morning, everybody. I want to thank everybody for being here in support of farm workers. These are the people that put food on our tables every single day. Farm workers continue to work to put food on our tables. They do it under the pandemic. They do it because high temperatures, when there is fires, when there is pesticides being sprayed, and they're every day in the fields harvesting the food that we enjoy every day. Farm workers are essential workers. Let's treat them like essential workers. We're here to make sure that this pilgrimage that many workers are joining, many supporters like you are joining, is going to represent what we have done throughout our history with Cesar Chavez, with Dolores Huerta, and all those people who came before us. Quiero darle las gracias, Dolores, por favor, si ven, Dolores. Quisiera, ella está aquí con nosotros. Yo quisiera que también nos dijera unas palabras, porque ella es una de las fundadoras de nuestro movimiento, y le agradezco muchísimo que esté aquí hoy con nosotros. Sí se puede.
So I just want to say thank all of you for being here. This is such an important march that you're doing. We know that California is one of the richest states in the United States of America. And the Central Valley here contributes to that wealth by all of the agriculture. And so we want the growers to know, and we want this march to reach their hearts and their consciousness to know that while the farm workers contribute to their wealth, the farm worker families are still very poor, and their children are very poor. And we should not be second-class or third-class citizens. So with your march and all the sacrifice that you're doing, we hope that this will reach the consciousness and the hearts of the growers and also the heart of the governor, okay? So, si se puede, adelante. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Teresa, Dolores Huerta, for your kind words. I'd just like to give a recognition for, raise your hand if you are someone who joined the original march in 1966. Please raise your hand. All right. We have Dolores, of course, El Capitan, Señor Roberto Bustos. Anybody else? I didn't catch them. Has anybody raised your hand if you joined the 1994 historic pilgrimage that took place from Delano to Sacramento? Wow, we have a young man here. That's fantastic. And Dolores, of course. And you too, brother? Unas palabras?
We marched to Sacramento in 1966. And to me, this brings a lot of memories. A lot of memories from the 40 acres. This is where we were fighting the companies, the growers from this place. 5 years we've seen each other here. 5 years in Delano working and fighting for our rights of farm workers. The 1966, I was named El Capitan of the 1966 march to Delano to Sacramento. And I'm here again. I'm still marching. Para los peregrinos, let me tell you, peregrinos, we already paved the road to Sacramento. You can't get lost. Follow our footprints. You're going to see our footprints along the way.
Si se puede con el capitán. Se puede o no se puede. Se puede o no se puede. Si se puede.
Welcome back to Full Circle right here on 94.1 FM KPFA and KPFA.org, part of the Pacifica Radio Network. We are listening to the kickoff of the march to Sacramento for the governor's signature. This is a 24-day, 335-mile pilgrimage to get the governor's signature on AB 2183, the right for farm workers to unionize without fear of intimidation or retaliation. Also there to kick off the event in a prayerful manner were members of AIM, the American Indian Movement. This is Shirley Garcia of the Mono Tribe and Wounded Knee, both of the American Indian Movement.
From the Mono Tribe, please welcome Shirley Garcia, who's going to welcome us into prayer.
Good morning and welcome. Thank you for taking care of the land. Thank you for coming and being here to walk on this special event. My name is Shirley Guevara. I'm a Dunlap Band of Monos. They couldn't find anybody at short notice from the Yokut community, but Monos and Yokuts are very similar in what we do. And before we even start an event, before we start a meeting, before we start anything, we offer a prayer because we are here on Grandmother Earth, and she gives everything to us so that we can live and we can survive as people. And so I would just like to offer a quick prayer. Grandfather, thank you for everything. Thank you for this beautiful day. Thank you for all the folks that have joined us here today to walk this walk. Thank you for our elders. Thank you for those that went before us. Grandfather, we ask for a special blessing for those little ones that'll be coming in, that we would take in our places. Thank you for the farm workers who work in the fields to bring the food to the table. We worked alongside with them as well, shoulder to shoulder. We sweated with them. We worked with them. We welcomed them. We ate together. We broke bread together. We gave thanks together. We just want to say thank you for everything and bless the walk, that they get there safely and nothing happens to them on their way, and that they are welcomed with whatever city they come into, and they are nourished and nothing happens. And thank you for everyone who has lended support in this event. And we just want to say thank you. And at this time, I would like to introduce Wounded Knee.
Thank you. I just got to give you a little brief history about the American Indian Movement. The American Indian Movement Walk with Caesar in 1966. We have always supported the Latinos, the Mexican, and other people who join us on this walk. So we're here to support you. We know the struggle of your people. I come out the fields with Cesar Chavez. I know Dolores Huerta. I know Paul Chavez. I know the people. We've been 500-mile runners, and we've been running for many, many years. And we want to thank the Creator for everything that he gives us on this earth. And you know what? Cesar Chavez would be very proud of you for walking for your people. Who's going to work them fields beside you? Who's going to work them? I worked them fields, and I know how hard it is when I got 10 cent a bucket and 25 cent for a box of fruit. So I know the struggle that you go through every day, working hard for everything. And Cesar Chavez, your ancestors, should be very proud of you to walk today. Stay safe, stay in prayer, and we want to present you with a banner. And I hope they can roll it out. I know the walk is 10 miles. We walked across the United States in 1978, and it took 5.5 months because they had 11 bills pending in Congress against Native American people and your people. And we met Muhammad Ali, who supported us. So I want to give this medicine to Dolores Huerta. She had worked very hard. I want to give this medicine to Dolores. I know her. She's very good. She has always been with the American Indian Movement and Dennis Banks of the American Indian Movement. So we're here to support you. And we hope you accept this banner. We're here to support you in your struggle to protect the land and your ancestors. Because Cesar Chavez should be very proud of you. He's looking down at you, and your ancestors are looking down at you. So this is what we bring you to support you in your struggle. Thank you very much. And we say, oh, Matakiasi, and ho-ho.
This is Miguel Gavilan Molina reporting for Flashpoints. I'm here today with Diana Torres, who is the executive administrator for the United Farm Workers Union. And it's a great pleasure to have us with us here today. Diana, it's quite a day. There's a feeling of revival, of renewal. As I'm talking with you, I have goosebumps because I myself personally have a history with United Farm Workers. But to see this today and to see a mixture of all ages and all peoples, not just La Raza, not just the campesinos, but people in solidarity and support. And it seems to be growing. What is your take on today and what do you expect of this march?
Well, this pilgrimage really is a dedication to the very workers who nourish not only California, but the whole nation and also many parts of the world. And so the fact that farm workers have to march in the heat to send a message to the governor, that Governor Newsom can't ignore the fact that farm workers deserve the opportunity to be able to vote for an election during an election from their home without having to be at the workplace where they may feel intimidated. And so this is something that is very basic that other voters during election seasons have. And so we hope that this is going to call attention to the fact that the governor must react in a positive way, that he must acknowledge the fact that he and his family are nourished by farm workers, that everyone who is in this state benefits from the hard work that they do, and that farm workers deserve the opportunity to have benefits, to have a union, to have a voice at the workplace.
No, absolutely. I call Gavin just Gavin because he hasn't earned the right to be called governor by myself because he's ignored us. And I believe about a half a year ago, we met in Napa at his fancy restaurant, the French Laundry, and the farm workers were there. And it was a walk from Yountville in the Napa Valley from the French Laundry restaurant to his estate, to his winery, which I think is called a Saddleback Winery. You know, I think it's like a $300 million estate. And who do you see out there working? Farm workers. But Gavin is clueless, just completely clueless. He's been silver spooned and, you know, come amongst the rich and the privileged and the entitled. So for us today, and myself particularly, and my compañero here, Pedro Reyes, this is a spiritual journey that we're coming to be in solidarity. And the message is clear that workers, period, deserve the right to unionize, and farm workers in particular. And back in 1966, when the first pilgrimage happened, it was to bring attention to the plight of farm workers who were invisible and yet are the backbone, the shoulders, the arms, the hands that made California into an agricultural empire and the fifth economic power on earth. Where does it come from? It comes from farm workers. And I know that last year there was an attempt to have a similar bill passed, and, you know, he vetoed it. So this is the second time. And it's interesting that midterm elections are happening in November. So if his advisors, if he has any Latinos, or he just might have Hispanics on his staff to advise him, they're advising him wrong. He needs to come out. He needs to address the people. You know, and one thing, Diana, I remember throughout the years, different efforts by the farm workers on marching on the Capitolio. There was a couple of instances where Jerry Brown came out and marched with the people. And one time, I remember, he was giving out water. And this guy here, you know, the governor now, he was carried under the wings of former Governor Jerry Brown, you know, as lieutenant governor, to be where he's at today. But he's completely ignored us. So what do you hope, you know, happens once we do reach Capitolio? And it looks like in every city, this group is going to grow and grow and grow. What do you hope for?
What we hope for is very clear. He needs to sign. He needs to sign this bill. And he needs to demonstrate that farm workers contribute economically day in, day out, during a pandemic, during wildfires. They're out there doing the brutal work of nourishing this state, and he just needs to act. And so the fact that he vetoed this bill last year was, for many, very surprising, right? Like, what? It was a slap in the face to farm workers. And the fact is that people are watching, that if he truly cares about these human beings who work so hard day in and day out, who contribute, that he needs to act. There's only one thing he can do, and it's sign the bill.
And if he doesn't, what is the next step?
We're the Si Se Puede crowd. So we are marching because we feel positive about the message that many supporters across the state are telling us, that there are no ifs, ands, or buts. He must sign.
And it's really important. You made a point that particularly in this particular season, this is firestorm season. You know, as we walk through the valley, we still got the Yosemite fires. We still have that smoke, toxic air blanketing the valley, and we're walking through it. Which brings up the point, Diana, that I believe he recently declared certain parts of California as a state of emergency because of the fires, you know, Yosemite and up in McKinley, up there in the Norte. And when that happens, there are towns that have been evacuated. There's whole regions of evacuation orders. People need to move out. And we saw that a couple of years back when the massive wildfires were happening in Napa. And there's an image, a picture that was distributed and went viral, where it shows the evacuation order came, people left. And in the middle of the valley, you see on both sides of the Napa Valley, they're on fire. And everyone's been evacuated, except you look in the massive vineyards and you see these dots. When you do a close-up, there's a farm workers working. There's fires on both sides of the valley. Everyone, even horses, livestock, was evacuated, except for those humans. So my question is to Gavin, are these essential workers? And during evacuation orders by the State Department of Forestry, does that include farm workers? And if you're going to leave farm workers out there, you're going to provide them with fire protective clothing? Are you going to provide them with masks, respirators, filters? Are you going to provide them with safety? And if the fire is raging, how essential are they also, because they're human beings, to be evacuated or left behind, as they have been? So that's a big question. And I know in some of the northern counties, there are massive debates right now amongst board of supervisors that are trying to answer that question. You know, so again, I mean, this is so important. And then, of course, countless issues. A lot of people don't even consider farm workers, agricultural workers, as being homeless. Well, I know in the northern counties, probably a third of the farm laborers are homeless, living in the bush, living in the brush, in creeks, you know, next to the rancho, next to the orchard, next to the fields. So really, I mean, we talk homelessness, and homelessness isn't just something that happens within towns and cities. It's something that's happening, you know, amongst agricultural workers. So that's something else that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and I mean, the very fact that a worker can have a union makes a huge issue. It makes a difference, right? The fact that a worker can negotiate wages, that they can negotiate benefits, that they could potentially have health care. I mean, the UFW Foundation did a survey of over 12,000 farm workers who responded. 75% of them responded that they didn't have health care. And so having a union at the workplace brings voice to workers, that they are protected because they have a union. And so making that change where farm workers are able to vote for unionization in their home where they feel safe without having the foreman looking over to see if they're voting or not, is very critical.
Yes.
And so the heart of the matter is that unions are good. Unions help workers in so many different ways. And I must say, in my experience early on in working with the United Farm Workers Union, in one of the campaigns that I worked on, many of the workers were being told just the mere fact of going and voting would be cause for them not to have housing the following year. Right? So it wasn't just, are they going to vote yes or are they going to vote no? It was the fact that just being seen, going to the poll to go and put their ballot in to make that very personal choice. They knew supervisors and foremen were out there kind of seeing who was coming in, who was leaving. And so it is a very real thing, intimidation. And so we just need to make this process a safe process. Farmworkers aren't asking for very much. They're asking the governor to help them exercise their right in this state to vote for.
Absolutely. And it's a right that all workers in this country have. And there's also protections that workers and unions get from OSHA, you know, and all these, you know, different groups.
Actually, farmworkers were excluded from the Fair Labor Standards Act in the 1930s. Right. And so across the nation, most farmworkers do not have the right to collective bargaining. They were excluded because Southern congressional members at that time said that Black workers did not deserve the same rights as white workers. And so these exclusions from overtime, from collective bargaining, still exist today at the national level. So this is an opportunity for the governor to say, not here. In this state, we protect the very people who feed us. And in this state, we're going to set the model for how workers can engage in a union in a safe way.
Wow. You just heard the voice of Diana Torres. Thank you so much for being with us and giving us insight into the social political reality of United Farm Workers and their attempt to have a voice, have a right to a voice. And as we know in this country, your vote is your voice. Su voto, su voz. Thank you so much, Diana, for being with us. And we will be talking again.
Thank you so much.
We're here at the 40 Acres with the UFW president, Teresa Romero, who will be marching full time. How are you feeling today?
I am feeling excited. We're at 40 Acres. This is a historical place. This is where Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta organized for decades. And this is where farm workers feel at home. And I they're energized. They're committed. They want to be here. They want to march. They want, and some of them are our members, but they're marching for other workers so they can have the same protections that they have. So it's very exciting.
Wonderful. I feel like you have the spirit of those who came before you, and then you have such other greats who are still here. And Dolores Huerta's here. She may not be marching, but boy, is she in solidarity and looking great.
She has spent her life fighting for farm workers' rights. And the fact that she's here today, joining us, seeing us start this march means the world to me. She's a woman that I admire and I look up to because all the work she has done for farm workers.
Tell us a little bit about that particular petition that you're asking Newsom to sign.
It is a bill that would give farm workers the opportunity to vote for union representation the way we vote for elected officials, the way we voted for the governor, where we have
options. We can do it in person. We can do it by mail. We can ask somebody to help us to fill the ballot, or we can ask somebody to deliver it for us. That is exactly what we're asking for farm workers. And I think we have seen that in California and everywhere else. I know there are people who don't believe in the Electoral College, but there in many places, especially in California, we know that that promotes participation. And we want farm workers to have those benefits that we all have in here in California. You know, currently farm workers, the only way they can vote for union representation is in person at the property of the owner. That is intimidating. And a large majority of farm workers are undocumented, and they're scared. Many family members work in the same farm. They're scared that if they support the union openly, they're going to be fired. So let's do it in a way that is going to protect the workers, that is going to protect their desire of whether or not they want to join a union. And let's give them the freedom to do it in a way where there is no intimidation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Teresa Romero, UFW president.
Okay, right here, guys. And then on three, we're going to give a si se puede, right? One, two, three.
Si se puede.
That was the collection of various local unions taking a photo with Dolores Huerta, shouting, si se puede.
After the prayers and the opening ceremonies, the marchers headed out on the first leg of their journey, a 14-mile walk in the 100-degree heat from Delano to Rich Grove, California. When the marchers arrived in Rich Grove, they ended the day at the Rich Grove Water District building. After a short rest, everyone broke up and went to their guest houses for the night. And the next morning, I spoke with the vice mayor of Delano, California, and host for the night of two of the long-distance marchers. This is Veronica Vasquez. Here's what she had to say about becoming the vice mayor of Delano and what she looks forward to doing as an elected official to support the farm workers and the march.
August 4th.
All right. This is Free Will and Franklin still out here. Now we're in Rich Grove, and it was the first stop on the first day of the march, and it was a 100-degree night. It felt like the clouds just kept the heat in all night, and well, it was terrible sleeping last night. But I'm joined here by the vice mayor of the city of Rich Grove, of Delano, and she helped house some of the folks. Let me just have you introduce yourself real quick.
My name is Veronica Vasquez. I'm the vice mayor of the city of Delano.
And so how does it feel, for one thing, just to be a vice mayor of such a world-famous city, for being, you know, such a small place? It seems like everybody knows of Delano from the grape strikes and the march. Tell us about your quick journey to becoming vice mayor of Delano. And
born and raised in the city of Delano. Sorry, I get emotional when I talk about my family history. It's just I do this because of my family. My grandparents, Jenny and Florentino Vasquez, did the fundraising for United Farm Workers. So I grew up at the 40 acres while they brought in all the bands to raise the money to get the people to continue to march. So I've been doing this since I was little and didn't realize I was part of a movement until I got into college. I went to school in the Bay Area, and that's when Cesar Chavez became a national holiday. And I was like, well, you guys don't know about him? I grew up knowing about him. You know, I grew up seeing him stand next to my grandpa, like, who's that man that looks like my grandpa? You know, so, and that's the reason I went off to college, so I could come back home so that I could help my community. And in 2020, I decided to run for city council. And I'm proud to say I had the most votes in any race. But that speaks volumes because I'm also union president for SEIU 521, the Kern County employees. And I knock on doors. I help people. You know, labor is how people get insurance, how they get overtime, you know, the basic necessities of what somebody needs. So I had to help with this march. I had to house people because that's what it's all about. It's helping and helping the movement. And that's what I grew up doing. So every time I talk about it, I get emotional because, you know, like, this is deep roots. This is what it's all about. You know, this is what makes me happy and my heart happy, because I know it's helping the community and it's helping nationwide. What we do here, I mean, like you said, the city of Delano may be small, but we're well known for the tough work that we do and the paving that we do for the movement. And that's why I house Lourdes at Gardenest yesterday, and there's going to be a documentary on this. And the film crew went to my home yesterday, and they interviewed her, and it was just so beautiful just to hear her story and hear why she's doing it. And it just made me, you know, even then realize more. I'm just happy that I could be part of a small part of it, because she's the one doing the walk. She's the one going to Sacramento. I'm just glad I could give her a cool place to sleep in and a nice bed for her and her sister.
Well, let's talk about what is the city of Delano doing to protect the farm workers? Because we know, like, statewide or even in the United States in general, there can be a lot of discouragement of farm workers or used as like some sort of political scapegoats. But what are you all doing in the city of Delano to take care and protect the people that feed the nation?
What we're doing is we're trying to get elected officials to get into office so that they can make those changes and change those policies. And that's what we try to do in our city, is to be the stomping ground to make that happen. That's the main goal, because right now our city council is majority of pro-union, and that's a big deal. And it was exciting for many when we took over the council in 2020.
And talk about, you mentioned you housed a couple of the folks. Tell us again a little bit more about, you know, what it was like just to have a couple guests that, you know, are on this pilgrimage, some people are calling it.
It was beautiful. I made it a point to make it special for them. I had a sign out there for them. I had balloons out there. My neighborhood knew I was housing people. I wanted it to be known to everybody that I was doing something beautiful for these people, because I know they're going to be on a long journey. You know, I made it, you know, a point to have, you know, Gatorades, waters, you know, flowers next to their bed. You know, I wanted them to feel special because they were special to me, and they're special to making this happen. And it was just, you know, and the fact that, you know, when they showed up, you know, they did get teary-eyed, you know, they did feel special. And that's what I wanted to do for them, because to me, they're special, and they're the real reason this is happening. They're doing the hard work, and it was nice. You know, I like I said, my family is part of the movement, so I brought out some old photo albums of my grandfather's, of old clippings of when they marched in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And my grandfather passed away in the early 90s, so I brought out all my books. My family gave me all the family heirlooms of, I have magazines, I have books. I have a book that Dolores Huerta signed, and she's like, hold on to this, there's only 100 copies. So that's what we did last night. We had a moment together, and we went over, you know, just different things, and, you know, just talking about the history of the movement, you know, and then telling her you're keeping that history going by what you're doing currently.
And a lot of people, we just talked a little bit about how the immigrants or the people doing the farm labor may just be frowned upon. They're not always getting the benefits that regular citizens are getting of the United States. Talk about why it's so important to keep them in mind and not forget about them. And also talk about, you know, how we wouldn't be able to eat the fruits and vegetables if we were.
They give us our simple, you know, our everyday food. And like you said, one of the things during the pandemic that the city did is we did a lot of food distributions for them. You know, we had them monthly, and that was something that wasn't being done. We made sure that we had a lot of vaccination clinics, you know, make sure that, you know, they were getting it because they don't have the medical. And those are the things that need to happen that we need to provide to them. And, you know, we're still looking for more resources on how we can help, you know, undocumented people, because that's what it's about. I mean, they're a good population of my community. And I definitely don't forget, and neither do my colleagues. And we make a point to let them know that. Like I said, the person I had at my home was special, but they're also special as farm workers. And we want them to know that they're special and that they're a priority for us as a council.
And I guess before I let you go, just what would you like to say to people out there listening to this, and just knowing that there's people right now walking still today, and they got 22, 23 more days to head all the way to Sacramento?
I would highly encourage them to, if they can't be there to greet them, to join them, then to donate. And then also when the documentary launches their website, to donate to the documentary, because the documentary is going to need money to actually execute the documentary. So there's many different ways that people can help out with this movement. And they have lots of opportunities, because they're going to be stopping at a lot of towns throughout the California.
All right, so I've been speaking with Veronica Vasquez, the vice mayor of Delano. Is there anything else you want to say to anybody out there?
Nope, just thank you, be supportive. And if you can't, open up your pocketbooks to help this happen. And when you see these people, talk to them, hear their stories, because they're very special.
Definitely, they're feeding us. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, hello, soy Esmeralda Hurtado, and I'm out here supporting the farm workers because both of my parents are farm workers. They've been farm workers for 20 plus years, actually working. They're working right now, and just wanting to support the movement. I've seen, you know, the intimidation that does happen, the oppression that happens in those spaces, and it's definitely time to change those areas for the farm workers to ensure that they have the equity and the you know, the privilege that they truly deserve for the work that they're doing for our community. You know, they do a lot in feeding and providing food for everybody's home, and the least they could have is safe and like a safe union as well, and one that's not filled with intimidation and a lot of just yuckiness. So I'm here supporting and doing what I can, again, for my family, but also for everybody else's family out here who is being impacted.
And how long have you had a line of farm workers in your family?
My parents are the first ones. They came to the United States in 92 and started in the farms right away. So they've been out here in these fields since 92. And again, just seeing what they've been through and what they've gone through, it's always just like, and there's been change. I won't say there hasn't been, but there's a lot more that can still be done.
You know, we talk a lot about the plight and the dangers and a lot of really the terrible working conditions. But what I would like to do is also ask you about what are some of the coolest things that your parents talk about doing the work itself?
Yeah, I mean, they've taught me how to grow different crops and stuff, which has been, I think, amazing. They have so much knowledge and what it means to, you know, plant something and nurture it and make it grow. And so thankfully we've also have created our own little garden in our backyard, and that's something I do with my parents even now. We have our lemon tree, our orange tree, our guava, we have pomegranate. So it's like, because of that, we're also able to create our own like field in our backyard, and hopefully it's still growing right now, but hopefully, you know, continue to be able to feed my family in the near future.
That's fantastic. And sometimes we, you know, we think about what it takes to grow plants and trees, and it can take a lot of time and energy. And yeah, there are people who've got the green thumb, right? But it also is a skill. It definitely is a skill. Is there anything special you do to your guava trees, or do they just put them in the ground? What kinds of skills do you see that you have learned from your parents? I mean, of course, you probably learn on your own as well.
Yeah, no, they definitely know how to prep the soil, ensuring that the nutrients are in there, the proper nutrients for the specific plant. And then cutting, you have to do a lot of different cutting and trimming. And so they go out and do that. They have their special gloves and their scissors, and they'll show me like, okay, this is how you do it, and this is how you move the scissors so you don't get hurt, because you could get hurt. Or if you use this motion constantly, it's gonna hurt, you're gonna get blisters, so do this instead. So it's just like those techniques that, again, are essential for any type of farming that you're doing. They've acquired those skills and just techniques to know how to do it in the sense that, so they don't get hurt for long, since they're doing it for long periods of time.
And what kinds of, are they working nectarines right now? What are they working in right now?
They're doing grapes. So they're currently, yeah, in LMR doing, I believe they're just cutting and trimming at the moment because the grapes aren't fully ready.
Yeah, my parents were farm workers, but they'd already retired long before they had me. And so I would mainly hear the stories. And so they would actually travel in like migrant camps, right? And so all of the kids would have to help out. Tell me about, what are some of the blessings that you and or your parents talk about that the farm work has provided for you and your family?
I think definitely for them, it's just like that's some stability to be able to get us through and allow us the opportunity for, you know, getting through college and getting access to all of that, because it's something that they didn't get through. So I know they've always tried their best to save any side money to get us any opportunities to get us out to college. And that's been like the biggest, I think, blessing, is the access to academia that I would not have had whatsoever had my parents not just continued to do their work.
And that's a big part of the story, is not just the resilience and the strength in the massive amount of skill that people bring with them from ancestors and from their own lands already, and then whatever you learn on the job and from other people. But one thing that I saw as well is the opportunity to give their children and their loved ones a life where they can go to school. So to me, in my mind, I think that requires a lot of saving and a lot of diligence and a lot of determination.
Yeah, and definitely a lot of sacrifice as well. They had to sacrifice their time to being with us so they could keep working and be able to have that money to put aside to get us on a field trip or to get us a new experience in the world. So definitely, again, super like blessed for my parents to have just not been selfish in that sense, but also like they have done so many sacrifices. Sometimes I'm like, it's my turn to give back. And so, again, that's why I'm here and continuing my career as well to be able to provide for them in the near future.
And what career are you going into?
I'm currently in my master's for social work with health equity and wellness. So again, doing this work and trying to provide resources for people.
That's fantastic. What country did they come from?
They came from Mexico. So they're from Abasolo, Guanajuato, Mexico. Yeah, and they're the only ones in their family really to have been able to make it here. So again, it's like they're creating that legacy for their community and their family as well.
Fantastic. In the beginning, you had mentioned some not so good things, but are you able to tell us about things that you've heard that happen to people when they try to get some basic rights? Are you hearing of physical violence? Are you hearing of more verbal punishment in terms of lack of hours? What is it that you hear either in your research or through people you know?
Yeah, definitely verbal. I've heard a lot of instances of verbally abuse being thrown at certain workers, and most of them being female, a lot of because they're quote unquote slower. And so they get yelled at for not keeping up with the group. I've also heard, especially with right now, they're only letting them work 40 hours, even though they're now access to doing overtime and getting paid overtime. And so, again, they're using those tactics to not allow them to gain access to, you know, more financial gain. And they're hiring more workers, but only hiring them for those certain hours. So they don't have to give them the opportunity to get more money. And so that's been unfortunate because my parents were used to a system where they could work a little bit more or, you know, try and find something, but now they're very stuck in just one space. And again, with things going up in price as well, it's like it's not really livable.
How was the pandemic affecting the area and the farm work from what you've seen and the farm workers?
Yeah, no, it definitely impacted them quite a bit. I think a lot of it was also safety. Like they were scared for their safety, their family's health, but also knowing that they had to come out and make money. And so there was that thing too, where they were still forced to work through the pandemic because they had to make ends meet, and the financial compensations that the government was giving wasn't enough as well. And so, yeah, putting that all together, it was greatly impacted. My parents personally, they didn't work for a whole year because they did get in a car accident. And so, again, thinking about that, they actually got in a car accident on their first day back on the field. So it's just like, you know, it's wild to think about. They were going through the pandemic as well, experienced something super traumatic and couldn't get that extra assistance and had to also leave their community for a year, the people who provide them that emotional support as well. So it was definitely hard on them, and I'm sure everybody else in the community.
How are they doing now?
They're doing a lot better. They're back. They took the year off and are now fully back to work. And they love their job. They're like, this is what we love doing. We've been doing it for a lot of years, and they feel really skilled and super passionate about it. So again, didn't want to take that away from them, but they are a bit older. You know, my dad turned 59 this year, and they're like, Dad, your body, I don't know if it can do all of that, but he's like, it can and it will. So they're out here.
I love that resilience, but I hear you. You're kind of talking to them like, well, maybe some rest time.
Exactly, like letting your body just heal, because they also have a lot of different things going on in their bodies because of working in the fields for so long. That's like, they definitely need a period of time where they could just relax and let their bodies heal.
And how has it been with protecting farm workers from pesticides? What are you hearing in terms of, I mean, we're in Delano, California right now, we're in Richgrove, but there's this assumption that there's not a whole ton of protections. I know that they probably close fields off and then spray if they need to. There's supposed to be more labels, and schools are supposed to be protected. What are you hearing is happening in terms of pesticide protocol or any poisonings?
I have heard my parents talk about like the fields being closed and stuff like that. So that's awesome that their company that they work for is doing that and being fairly consistent. It still doesn't take the fact that they go in there and it gets on their clothes. And so my parents do have their own protocol of when they get home, none of their clothes goes inside. It all comes outside because they can smell it on themselves. And you do smell it, and it's sad that it still carries on to them and onto their car and all of that. So although, yes, there's protections, it's still getting on to them. And I don't know what can be done in order to create that safety barrier for them.
It reminded me during the pandemic, many people who worked in settings, maybe in hospital settings or other settings, would come home and have such a strict protocol and probably had to do it for 2 years and maybe still. Imagine, though, as a farm worker, like having to make that choice where you have to have such a strict protocol where I don't want to, well, nobody wants to poison their family, but imagine working, what is it, 8 hour, 12 hour plus days, and then knowing that you have to take all your clothes off as early as possible to try to prevent it from coming into the home and washing it or what have you. And that's a lot of work. It's also a lot of mental work. It's also frightening, as you said, that you can smell it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's, I guess, the mental aspect of it, too, I think is something that needs to be highlighted more of how mentally draining this job truly is. And if things aren't put safely, then that just keeps deteriorating. And the resources aren't there to help also the mental health of farm workers. There's not necessarily a lot of support there. And so, it's a trickling down effect. And a lot of different things get affected.
I want to go back just a tiny bit to where you had said that the laws changed, right? Was it local law or was it state law where they have to pay overtime?
I believe it was a state. I'm not too sure. I was reading on it yesterday about like the overtime and stuff like that in regards to the bill. So I was just like, oh, okay. I was trying to get myself familiarized. My parents as well, is that their job is no longer giving them those overtime opportunities. And so that's where I made those two connections.
Right. So there's something that's prompting the boss, grower, or whoever's in charge, right? Something that's prompting them to say, no, they knew all along, right? You know, when you work over 8 hours or you work over 40 hours and some jobs less hours that you're going to pay overtime. It's a matter of whether you can get away with it or not, right? And so there's probably fines or what have you, stigma at minimum. And so it's like a punishment then. It's like, okay, well, now you won't have more than 40 hours. And that, I think, also leads us back to something like union representation and the purpose of this walk is that I could be out here all I want doing interviews and thinking I know what any individual farm worker wants, but we don't know, right? Nobody knows, but they should at least have their own right to choose whether they want to be a part of a union or not. Because if we assume like, oh, they need to be paid for overtime, yeah, of course, who doesn't want to get paid more money, what they deserve, like every other worker? But when it gets down to it, if you ask a farm worker if they'd rather just be cut off at 40 hours or work extra hours, even if it's not overtime, we might get different answers than we would expect.
I think, and that's exactly what it is, just, you know, really going to the farm workers and asking what is it that they're wanting and the resources that they're needing, and really just accommodating the union for that, because that's who the union is representing, right? It's the farm workers who are out there. And so that representation and the voting that goes into it needs to come straight from them. And the intimidation that goes into it is just, it's unfortunate, really, because, again, it's following the same, you know, ideas to some extent of what happens on our outside government. And so it's just like, let's make these small union places a safe for everybody, you know, who it's supposed to be representing.
And by intimidation, we're going back to the fact that the farm workers are marching from Delano to Sacramento on a almost month-long trip to ask Governor Newsom to sign a new bill, much like the one he rejected recently, so that farm workers have the ability to vote for their own union representation in a way that doesn't have to be on their boss's property. And so that's what their goal is. It's really about the right to vote, even if it isn't voting for the governor or the mayor per se. It's really about having that option. And so the ones who are intimidating would be obviously the ones who have the most to lose or anything to lose at all. And that can be some bosses and some growers. I've never met any personally. I can't say they're all like that. And I know a lot of changes are happening. But, you know, there's always that appeal to the growers and to the bosses and the foremans, right? The people who put together the transportation, there's always that appeal of, please, they're human. Like, what's all that money? What's the more money that you make? We can't take it with us when we go. and at what cost?
Yeah, no, and I think that's something we need to consider just in general as humanity as well, of like, you know, we're all human, we're trying to exist here and trying to make our world just a better place. And so how can we support one another and create those environments where we are just, you know, being able to live equitably and being able to live without those extra barriers that exist in our society?
What comes to your mind is some basic civil rights that farm workers are fighting for when we're talking about dignity and respect, but also some basic civil rights or rights that employees should have?
I think, you know, the ability to advocate for themselves, I think a lot of those spaces aren't provided. You know, there's those power dynamics that come into play with the supervisor and the employee. And I think just eliminating that hierarchy and just making it a walking, I always talk about like walking bridge, right? So it's like the supervisor can provide support and skills, and so can the employee, because again, everybody has skills to offer and not just one person is an expert on everything. So I think that's one of it, just creating those spaces of dialogue and communication. And the other thing is really just like safe spaces. I mean, my parents are out working right now. It's going to be 100 degrees or so. I personally don't think it's just for a person to be moving that much, and in the heat plus the body heat that your body creates in general. So it's just like having more regulations on that, because though they say they have, it still doesn't get respected.
Do you, and this doesn't have to be about your parents, but just in research or other people you know, do you know if they have to move physically as much in 90 plus weather, 100 degree weather, as they do in the winter in 80 degree weather?
I think it really does depend on the space. I know my parents were working in a different space where they did have them just go, go, go. It was like no rest. Right now where they're at with the company, they are very much like take it slow, be okay. They're more in tune with the farmer's body and what's going on, right? So they do provide those spaces of like, take a 5-minute break, get your water, go relax. But in the space that they were prior, that was not the reality. It was go, go, go. My mom's legs were hurting and she couldn't stop, because again, she'd get reprimanded by somebody because she was falling behind. And so you do still get those two sides, and even today, it happened this year. So it's like, it's still happening.
Do the people that you know usually drive themselves to work? And what do you hear about, you know, the buses that kind of come through with a lot of workers all at once?
I'm not too familiar with the buses, because my parents have always been drivers. So they do drive 45 minutes or so to their place of work. And they also carpool with different people depending on if they're needing that support. So there is a lot of community in that as well, of like people helping one another out to get to their place of work. And which I think is another beautiful thing of like, oh yeah, I'll slide by. You're on my way there regardless. Like I'll pick you up. We'll get to work. We'll be good. So there's a lot of still community on that. But again, I'm not too sure about the buses, just because my parents have never been ones to use them.
I feel like you've drawn up the theme of community at least a couple times, and something that comes to mind is they're just like everybody else, right? We're all the same. We're all human. We're all on this earth. We're all in it together. But then there's also this notion that farm workers are second-class citizens in many ways, especially when there are ways for exploitation to seep in and sink in, right? Because that's the reason. We know there's a lot of additional reasons, right? The historical genocides, the capitalism, racism, attitudes toward migrants. But the reality is where any one person or company can exploit another human, right? There's going to be that like, oh, I'm better than you, or you don't get equal rights. But the beauty of community is that we all build our own community. The idea is how do we learn more about each other's community? And not to mention that when we're sitting at our table looking at the fruits, especially these days, you're looking at your nectarines, you're looking at your grapes. And as the seasons come and go, and these fruits and vegetables, we are connected. And how do we respect and honor that, you know? I think that's an important piece of all of this.
No, know, and I think that's where, like, I encourage people to really go out there and connect with different groups, different demographics that you're not a part of, and really just challenging the ideas that you, that they've, and the messages that they've been given, and, you know, really try to understand a person for who they are and what they bring to the table. And I think eliminating, again, working to eliminate those stigmas, because you do find a lot of beauty when you just learn to take off those glasses, in a sense, you know, that they've put on us to some extent. So I think I always encourage people to go out there and just meet someone new. And I don't know, you might learn a lot and be able to share skills with one another.
Thank you very much. We're here in Rich Grove, California, and the Farm Worker March to Sacramento, pilgrimage essentially to Sacramento, is on day two. And the workers have taken off, including the UFW president, Teresa Romero. She is walking with people today from Rich Grove for another 10 to 14 miles or so today. And it was 94 degrees last night at 3 a.m. I have to say, I did not get that much sleep trying to camp out at Lake Success. Was not a success. Tell us your name again. And
I'm Esmeralda Hurtado.
Thank you so much, Esmeralda, for talking to us about why you're here today, helping out and being here to see the farm workers off on their pilgrimage on day two. Thank you for talking with us here at La Onda Bajita. And this morning, day two of the UFW and farm worker pilgrimage from Delano to Sacramento, we arrived at the Rich Grove Water District. They were hosting the marchers, welcomed them essentially when they arrived to Rich Grove from Delano. And we are talking with the board president of the Rich Grove Water District.
Morning, my name is Rosanay Paniagua. I am 24 years old and I am currently the water board president for the Rich Grove Community Services District.
Tell us a little bit about how you became the board president. And what is the Rich Grove Water District?
Yeah, so I joined the Rich Grove Water Board District about a little under 2 years ago. I grew up in Rich Grove, very small farm working town. My parents are immigrants from Mexico. And yeah, they arrived here. I was born and raised here. You know, Rich Grove is a small unincorporated town. So I saw a lot of, you know, disparities in my community and just wanted to get involved and see what I can do. And, you know, since we're in an unincorporated town, we don't have a mayor, city council, and this water board is one of the only boards where I can have a voice, you know, to change certain things. And yeah, the Rich Grove Community Service District has a water board, which, you know, decides on water rates, or, you know, we deal with little emergency mishaps when, you know, our water gets contaminated by certain pesticides and a few other things that we do. You know, we got a park a few years ago, and we also help maintain it with the community. You know, we try to gather volunteers. And, you know, about a week ago, actually, we got a call from a community member asking if they can, if we can open up the space in our office to house, you know, farm workers that were doing this march. And I know, you know, a little bit about what's going on with the UFW. And I was like, of course, you know, let me contact our board members, which are all, you know, they understand the farm worker struggle and, you know, the immigrant struggle. So, of course, you know, we opened our doors, and really glad the Rich Grove Community Services District, you know, agreed. And, yeah, we were able to give some AC to people, waters, Gatorades. You know, the community members also in Rich Grove came through. They gave us some Gatorades. They supported with tacos. And, yeah, it was, you know, a little last minute, but we made it happen. And glad folks got to rest a little before they head on to their next stop.
What a beautiful thing that you did. I know that we were told that we could also have that opportunity as reporters to come hang out and stay as well. I know I've said it already before, but it was 94 degrees where we camped. It's very hot, and that was at 3 in the morning. And so think about some of the basic things that farm workers are asking for these days, as they have been for so long, and including, you know, water, shade, rest breaks, overtime. This particular pilgrimage was more so about having them going to ask for the governor's signature so that they, farm workers, have the right to choose union representation or not, but in a way where they can do so without fear of intimidation and retaliation and not have to make that choice or vote on the premises of their boss. So I'm blown away mainly by the fact that you said that the water board had kind of like created itself, trying to help create the rates, but also sound the alarm, if you will, about the safety of the water and that there it's an unincorporated town, no mayor, etc. I'm also very thrilled by the fact that you're the president at 24. You know, we want presidents of all ages for these kinds of community things. Please tell us about the water here in Rich Grove and the population general.
Yeah, so quick, you know, context, unincorporated towns in most counties in California, they have some type of board to give a service, right? And we have one board to give water services to the community. So, you know, this community is majority farm workers, immigrants. We have, you know, Mexicans, Latinos, Filipino folks here. That's pretty much as diverse as it gets here. You know, folks, it's a really small town, so a lot of people know each other. I grew up here. And yeah, we face a few, you know, environmental issues. Our water specifically, you know, is often contaminated. We have oranges to our left. You know, we have grapes to our right. We have now pistachios coming, you know, really close by, and all those, you know, forms of crops. Of course, agriculture at this moment uses maybe harmful pesticides that get into our water, into our soil. And, you know, we use groundwater to you fill up our wells, and sometimes they get contaminated because of how close we are. And, you know, sometimes we have to give emergency notices, you know, don't use your water today. Nitrates are really high. Folks have to rely. I don't know if you can see there. There's like jugs of water. So actually the county and a nonprofit got together and they collaborated on a grant, and now the community of Rich Grove has access to clean water with 5 gallons every 2 weeks, which is really amazing. But yeah, the water board, we keep water flowing to the community, and you know, any community comment that they have or any public issue that comes up, we try to do our best.
Imagine that, you know, we're in a drought, and I know we're all worried in some way about water, but we've got basically endless amounts of water coming out of our spouts. But imagine that being called up and told, you really, really, please don't, you really don't want to use the water today because of high nitrates. Can you tell us about nitrates in the water?
Yeah, I know nitrates is one of the chemicals, one of the substances in our water. We also have a few other chemicals sometimes, and all these chemicals, you know, are linked to cancer rates. And you know, unfortunately, like my mom actually got cancer. She was a farm worker, and alongside her, there's so many other people with similar stories in Rich Grove or other unincorporated towns, you know, farm working towns that unfortunately have to face, you know, the consequences of what ag uses. You know, the tactics to make big ag, you know, work and function to feed the world, which, you know, we're really hopeful that someday that changes and, you know, more sustainable solutions are brought forward to care for our farm workers, because they, you know, they feed the world and they need access to, one, healthcare, which many don't have, access to a safe environment, access to clean water. And at the moment, we don't have that in Central California, which is a little ridiculous because our state has so much money, but we know that that's how things are going. But, you know, we're still here trying to advocate for our communities, for ourselves, and, you know, just better livelihoods, healthier communities.
What are some of the immediate steps that you believe will help bring safe, clean drinking water to Rich Grove? And then also, the sky's the limit. What needs to be done here?
Yeah, I would say step one, the state needs to take action in creating more of a network to reach out to these communities when an emergency does happen. You know, we are a community of survivors, and we're used to supporting one another and not necessarily rely on the state sometimes, you know, because we're pretty much in the middle of nowhere in a small unincorporated town, you know, and access to certain resources are never there. And I would say that network and connection of reliable sources and resources that can support us, you know, that would be great. As of now, the only network I see is like the network that the people have created. You know, I currently am working on like connecting with other small incorporated towns so we can support one another, you know, troubleshoot issues that we all face, because I know, you know, we're not going anywhere. Farm workers are going to migrate to these small communities that are, you know, one, a little cheaper to live in, a little, because it's not too different. But also, I would say just the state needs to support with infrastructure and helping these communities know how to survive out here. A lot of people here that migrate here are immigrants, and, you know, they don't necessarily feel like they belong. And if, you know, I would say other community members or other nearby cities can support also, you know, and making them feel welcome and started, you know, with certain events or activities or trainings. Even I know there's a nonprofit in Tulare County that sometimes, you know, offers trainings, but, you know, currently right now everything is online, and a lot of people here, they don't have money to pay for reliable Wi-Fi. And, you know, I'm always an advocate for free public services, and, you know, that's one thing that would do amazing, you know, have an amazing aftermath if that were to happen, or if, you know, folks in the county want to expand other public services that might help our communities that are, you know, always, one, making very low wages, because farm workers are not getting what they deserve. You know, they have to be working backbreaking labor, and sometimes they face a lot of you know, injustices around the labor that they do, you know, harmful conditions. So I would just say so many things could change. As of now, just more resources and more support for these communities to know how to, you know, sustain themselves for the long run, because, you know, we're currently in a drought and things aren't seeming to get better. And I think with the connection and infrastructure that focuses on all the issues that are going on, we might, you know, find a quick solution, or a solution that's sustainable for all of us.
And let's be real, there are plenty of places who feel they have safe water. And we get these letters in the mail that says you have X amount of toxins in there, but it's okay. And then you don't ever really know. We have no real way of knowing until you get those Aaron Brockoviches out there. An injury to one is an injury to us all. Do you have any researchers coming out here? I know the human aspect is the most important. I'm so sorry to hear about your mother with cancer, and the other people with cancer. Is there any scientific studies being done, any research? I mean, it's all the same across the entire land. There's going to be a fight of, like, it was the pesticides. No, it wasn't. In circles. Or anybody come out here and talk to you all?
Personally, no, I have not heard of anyone, you know, taking an interest in finding a cancer cluster here, you know. But I would say, just like you said, it's kind of the norm in Central California or in rural areas where immigrants live. But yeah, as of now, it's, you know, just word of mouth, folks. Oh, this new person got cancer. This other person got cancer. And our cancer center, you know, is 45 minutes away to an hour. So, you know, going back to the question, what can be done? It's, again, expanding the network and infrastructure. And, you know, folks that do have cancer here, it would be amazing if, you know, the county would provide transportation, for example, instead of having them look for it when they're going through their chemo. So, I mean, I would love some researchers out here, especially if they have the connections to get the word out. But I would say it's known that our community is the way it is, but I would say till the people feel empowered to take their their experiences either to the Capitol or even to their local government, you know, county. County doesn't do much for us, unfortunately. We're at the end of the county, and we, of course, get the least resources. And again, unincorporated towns get the least resources because we don't have, taxes to rely on from our property taxes to rely on that, give us enough funding to have extra resources for our community, you know, for basic needs. But yeah, I would say hopefully I can make a connection with some folks that can get the word out and spread the word out. Always staying hopeful for that. My name is Rosanay Paniagua. I am 24 years old, and I am a child of immigrants to Rosa and Ruben Paniagua.
And the president of the Rich Grove Water District. What an honor. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for hearing us out and for joining the farm workers on their struggle to get that signature.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Delighted to welcome back to these airwaves our good brother Miguel Gavilan Molina. He's a senior producer on this show. He is doing the hard walk. He's taken the journey with the farm workers. He's on the ground. He's been marching. The heat has been hovering around 100, 110. Maybe you can get 99 in the shade. Miguel, good to have you back. What happened on the march today? Where did you march from to, and what happened?
Well, we actually started where we ended yesterday at Rich Grove, which is just, about 12, 15 miles north of Delano. And yesterday, we walked 12 miles. Today, we walked 13.
Miguel, tell us a little bit about, let's listen to a little bit. Dolores Huerta was out there in the heat.
Yes, she was.
Speaking in English and Espanol. So let's listen to a little bit of Dolores Huerta, and then we'll come back. We'll talk
Absolutely.
Some more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm kind of here to help giving them a send-off, you might say. And we hope that everybody will be safe. I want everybody to drink a lot of water. And it's just wonderful to see the wonderful support that the United Farm Workers has, and to see people coming from all over the state of California to come here to join them as they start their march. So, we wish them well, and hope that the goals that they want will be achieved.
Thank you very much. And is there anything in particular you'd like to say about what they're marching for today?
Well, they're marching to try to facilitate and make the representation process more easier for the farm workers to gain representation. But we also have to say to the growers out there that, that they keep fighting for the farm workers to be able to have their union. And it took many years of struggle to get the basic human rights for farm workers, to get the right to have a union, to get unemployment insurance, to get bathrooms in the field that the farm workers didn't have before. A lot of sacrifices that were made by martyrs that we have in the union that were killed just to get those basic human rights. And it shouldn't be that way. And so I think the message has to be out there to the growers. Give farm workers their democratic right to have a union, okay? This is a message we want to give out there to the farm workers, to the growers. Okay, please recognize these are essential workers. These are the people that put the food on everybody's table, including them, And without the farm workers, you could not prosper. So it's time to recognize the workers and recognize their union.
And how do you feel like the governor of California has been treating our farm workers and, our immigrants so far?
Well, we know that the governor gave a lot of money during the stimulus to undocumented workers. I think we're the only state that did that. We know that the governor has just signed, included in his budget, and that undocumented people, a lot of whom are farm workers, are going to have be covered under our medical plan. This is, again, the first state in the United States of America. So I think that the governor has been very supportive of workers in general in the state of California.
Any words for Teresa Romero? I heard that the president of the UFW is marching full time.
Yeah, well, God bless her. I know. She's a wonderful human being, and we're so happy to see that the farm workers have a strong woman as their president. And not only her, but you know, the majority of the board are women also. So I think it really says something. So now we have a woman who is the head of the Farm Workers Union. We have a woman who is the head of the California Labor Federation, Lorena Gonzalez, and the national union in the United States, Liz Shuler. So, I mean, this really pretends to be really good for our whole country.
And what would you like to say, like, to the average American when they're, like, eating their vegetables or enjoying the food that these farm workers pick? And, you know, we get a lot of the rhetoric from, like, the Trump-type people to bash the immigrants. But, you know, remind people when they're eating and, you know, where all this is coming from.
Yeah, if they can just remember whatever they're eating, that some farm worker and some farm worker's family is responsible for you having the food on your table. And just remember them and also support the farm workers in every which way that you can, because they are the essential, the most essential workers, you might say, you know, that really take care of us, because they nourish us. They nourish our bodies, and we want you to help nourish their souls and their health by supporting them.
And I know that they have the spirit of those who came before them, behind them today, and then the strength and the power and the perseverance and the fantastic footsteps of those who are still alive and fighting, such as yourself today. The Lotus, what an honor. Thank you speaking with us.
And thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gracias, Dolores.
And yeah, that was Dolores Huerta speaking with Flashpoints contributors. That was Frank and Sarah. You're listening to Flashpoints.
So it is day two of the farm worker pilgrimage from Deleno to Richgrove was the first day, and then Richgrove to Tarabella, and they just finished that second leg. They've been walking since 7 a.m. today. Miguel Gavilan Molina, you walked all of day two. How are you feeling, or what's on your mind?
Si se puede.
Well, exactly. Franklin, you did a large part of day two. Free Will and Frank Sterling, how you feeling?
Feeling good, feeling good. Was ready to walk and, you know, just be out there and be part of the actual walking, you know?
Fantastic. Let me let you get some rest. How are you guys feeling? How are you guys doing?
Cansados, pero de la injusticia, ya vamos.
So we're entering the area where the marchers are resting.
Si se puede, que descansen. ¿Cómo se sienten?
Un poquito cansados, pero con mucho ánimo. Con mucho ánimo, mucha energía todavía.
Cansaditos, pero vale la pena. Tiene que valer la pena el sacrificio de nosotros los campesinos para que así el gobernador haga poca conciencia de que nosotros somos esenciales y merecemos un trato esencial.
Y no se mira cansada. You're sweating, Teresa, and that's it. And that's it. Oh, you're not even, she's not even sweating. That's mist. She's misting herself with a water bottle.
If I spray myself, it cools me down. So I've been doing it all the whole march.
I'm more purple than you, and I've been in a vehicle. you guys are ultra marathoners already in our minds. ¿Cómo se siente? ¿Qué tiene en la mente? No se mira cansada.
Cansadísima. pues cansada, pero feliz de estar aquí y ser parte de esto. Porque el día de mañana pasado mis hijos vean esta lucha y vean los logros que pudimos tener. Eso es lo más importante. Así que hay que darle para adelante, que vienen las ampollas, que vienen los dolores. No importa. Hay que llegar con más fuerza donde vamos. Y es todo.
¿Y cómo se llama?
Cintia Burgos.
Mucho gusto, Cintia.
My name is Daniel Oriana Rogers. And, no, thank you. And I feel good. I really do feel good. Because it's the cause, you know, La Casa, that we're out here for. And it's just, we got a good start today. And we just feeding off each other's energy, you know, inspiration. And just working together as a team and motivating one another. And that's what's exciting about this. Looking forward to arriving in Sacramento.
Oh, my goodness. The weather is super hot, day two, and he says, I'm looking forward to arriving in Sacramento. You can see it on the horizon already. Hello. What's on your mind? Please introduce yourself. I know you've been out there making sure people are safe. You're one of the many support teams. What's on your mind?
My feet that are pulsating right now, so I'm just letting them breathe and kind of recover. It's day two, 27 miles later, and so it gets it starts to get intense, but more importantly, also making sure that all our team is safe, everybody that's here, that they're hydrated, that they're being safe, and so we can all get there.
And please introduce yourself.
My name is Armando Alenes, Secretary of Treasury for the United Farm Workers.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to take a moment to thank everybody that's out here helping support this crew of marchers and everybody that is actually taking on the task and walking these 335 miles. I'm not going to lie and say I marched on both days that I've been here, but I did march about 10 miles yesterday. It was over 100 degrees out there, and I just wanted to share some of my thoughts with you all as we head into these next weeks and these marchers continue on to Sacramento. During our march through the city of Rich Grove and on to Terrabella, we passed through orchards of olives, of citrus fruit like grapefruit, lemon, oranges. All around us was agricultural equipment, tractors, tankers, and farm workers working out in the fields in this temperature. As we walked those miles, I kept thinking about those folks that are actually out here working every day in this tremendous heat. And for what? To feed the people of America. That's right, to feed us. I'm also reminded of the people that die every year due to heat-related illnesses out here in these fields. As I keep walking, I keep those thoughts in mind. And when we finally got to our rest point, we were treated to food, water, Gatorades, and everybody was happy to take a break and reflect on the first leg of the day's journey. And before we headed out to finish the last 3 hours of our journey, a woman came into the yard carrying a large United Farm Workers banner. And next to the farm workers symbol was the Virgin of Guadalupe. Everyone was excited to see the banner, and when people held it up, the woman that brought the banner began to sing, and I'll let you hear that as we get ready to wrap up tonight.
Mañana no.
¿Se puede o no se puede?
Sí se puede.
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 ¡Woo! ¡Hasta Sacramento! ¡Hasta Sacramento! ¡Viva la raza!
¡Viva!
Yeah.